I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Kaylin.
And you are tuning in to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from the very top of Burnaby Mountain.
We're stoked to be your host for the next hour, exploring local and global events using sociological perspectives. Thanks for tuning in.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish speaking peoples. Welcome everybody to Sociologic. I am Rebecca and I will be your host for the next hour. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you're all having a great evening. And it's good to be back. I know I haven't really been here much the past 2 weeks. I went home for a bit of time back in the UK. So Kaylin luckily was taking over for those 2 weeks. I hope you guys enjoyed her episodes. And we'll be back, the two of us, next week. Should all be back to normal by then. So it's just me today, but I have what I think is one of the topics that really got me into sociology to begin with. So I'm going to talk a bit about subcultures and the history subcultures have in the UK, because they've been around since about 1950s, 1960s, particularly with post-World War II Britain. And so I just want to talk about the history behind them all, and the different ones that we see, as well as the significance behind subcultures and what we see today in contemporary society. So how have subcultures kind of changed, and can we really even call them subcultures anymore? So kind of looking at how they've transitioned, and I'll probably also be touching a bit upon kind of different theoretical frameworks that sort of explain subcultures and why they're formed, why we see them in society, why we don't see such distinct ones. And just taking a look at kind of the changing side of them all. So that's today's episode. Pretty interesting one, I think. And yeah, I hope you guys are all looking forward to it. I'm going to start off with some music as well. We'll probably have a bit more music than normal because me and Kaylin usually end up waffling along when it's the two of us and end up not playing as much music. So probably have a bit more music in today's episode as well. And I've got a mix of different things from the playlist that I found, a mix of CanCon, a mix of FemCon, as well as some English and Scottish and Irish music, so kind of a real mix of different parts of the UK in there as well. So we're going to start off with a Canadian FemCon artist called Abby Sage that I found on the playlist, and this is off of her album from last year called The Rot, and it's called Three Floors and Three Doors.
Three doors back to my youth. it back.
Down. I must be dreaming.
and welcome back to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You are currently tuned in to Sociologic here, and I'm Rebecca, and I'm going to be your host for the remainder of this hour until 8 p.m. And just a recap on those songs you just heard. That last one was called Dreaming by the Canadian band The Darcys, off of their album last year, Rendering Feelings. And the song before that was called You Were a Beach by BBY, off of their album One. And they're actually an English band that I found off of the playlist, but that album was released last year. And the first song was Three Floors, Three Doors by the Canadian artist Abby Sage off of her album The Rot. Now, to sort of start with our topic of subcultures today, I just wanted to start with kind of defining what a subculture is. So it is a group of people within a cultural society that shares a kind of secondary set of values that are differentiated away from the mainstream agreed upon societal goals and values. And they can be influenced by absolutely anything, from music to politics or social issues. And a lot of the ones you'll probably hear about from the 1950s and 60s are often related to one of three major classifications in societal inequalities, and there's often a kind of hybridity as well. It's not that they're just solely one or the other, but those inequalities will be social class, gender, and ethnicity. And I guess like the easiest way of kind of understanding it is a subculture is a culture within a culture, in a broad sense. And they have played kind of significant roles, particularly for youth and young people, because they heavily contribute to social integration and group solidarity. They often provide a space where individual people can discover their own identities and kind of experiment with different versions of themselves. And so they are often seen as intrinsic parts to society. They have also been linked to deviancy and crime, but there is also a side to it that isn't related to that. And subcultures played a really big part in the era of post-World War II Britain. So kind of going back and looking at how subcultures changed from then and where they started, So in post-World War II Britain, you saw the formation of kind of three main subcultures, and they were predominantly fueled by conflicts between social classes and the capitalist social hierarchy. So with this, it mainly being around the 60s that you're starting to really see an emergence of them. This was because there was an era of baby boomers, from the children that were born around the time of World War II. And with them becoming teenagers, it coincided with an introduction of pop music, rock and roll. A lot of American media, cinema, music was brought over to the UK. And alongside this was an economic boom for young people, where for the first time they had money in their pockets to spend on whatever they wanted, which was predominantly around like fashion and things. So that kind of background fueled a formation of subcultures in young people. And we're going to start off by looking at two subcultures that were considered rivals for a lot of their time. And this is the mods and the rockers. So this was around the 1950s, 1960s. And alongside the mods and rockers was the development of a sociological concept called a moral panic, which I'll go into a bit about as well. But to talk a bit about what the mods were and what the rockers were. So the mods were a subculture that were very stylish. They spent a lot of money to look smart with tailor-made suits and Italian-type shoes. They were wearing American military coats that were parkas, and were often seen kind of moving around on Italian scooters like Vespas. And they were kind of, the common ground for their music taste was Black American music and Motown. Now, the Rockers, however, were more of a variation of American rock and roll bikers. So they were dressing in leather jackets, had like the greased back hair and motorcycle boots. Probably, if you've seen Grease, they were very similar to the John Travolta and the Thunderbirds from the movie Grease, which was released in like the 1970s. They were constantly seen on motorbikes and high-powered British bikes, and were typically preferring rock and roll type music. So the mods and the rockers were very polarizing, very different. And they were seen as two very conflicting youth subcultures, and it ended up actually leading to several riots around England, notably one in Brighton in 1964, which actually led to a publication by quite a well-known sociologist called Stanley Cohen, and it was called Folk Devils and Moral Panics in 1972. And it kind of looked into the conflict of the mods and the rockers, particularly this one down on Brighton Beach, and how it was so widely publicized by the media that it actually caused a moral panic with the public around British youth, and portrayed the mods and the rockers as being very violent and troublemakers. And when you actually look back on it now, and some of the studies that have been done on it, they actually only became rival subcultures because the media actually said they were rival subcultures. It fueled a violence that was seen from both of them, really kind of digging into just how polarizing they were to each other. And they had like a few minor street fights that ended up leading to front page news stories, which then led to a lot of fighting and vandalism and antisocial behavior that went up kind of a next level and became quite serious. And obviously then that led to more news stories. And those news stories started to unravel a whole panic in society about British youth. So it was, those headlines were selling millions of newspapers, and that caused an increase in policing and funding for the over-policing from government. All towards the beachfronts where a lot of these, like, quote, fights were taking place. And so the media really amplified the divide in these subcultures, these two subcultures. And yet it came out years later, actually, that many of the interviews and stories had been fabricated or staged, and many of the people from the mods and the rockers subcultures actually revealed they had been paid to cause trouble. And they actually didn't have a problem with each other. They just wanted to drink and dance and hang out. So when the media actually stopped patrolling them for stories, they actually went back to being friends and less of a rival, conflicting subculture. But it was quite interesting that you're looking kind of post-war Britain. The influence of the American culture was seen in both of them, with the rockers more than the mods. The mods took more of an Italian look, but the rockers had the very much American rock and roll bikers. And you will still see them out today in the UK if you're going around like seaside towns, or there's ones called now, they're like cafe bikers, and you'll see these like roadside cafes and things that will have just lines of like biker gangs by them. And it's all kind of people of that generation that still very much participate in the rocker subculture. But that was going on like late 50s, early 60s. And then you kind of moved on to the what is considered the very first English UK subculture known as the Teddy Boys. Now, they emerged in London and were predominantly a working class subculture, but they dressed like the ruling class. And this was because post-war Britain saw a huge like reconstruction, both physically and socially, with the economy kind of rebounding, but it was an uneven distribution of wealth. It started to lead to a very stark contrast in the ruling and working classes. So more typically known in sociology as like the bourgeoisie and the proletariats. Now, alongside this kind of economic reconstruction that was being seen, there was also a changing political landscape. So there was a rise of a conservative government that at the time famously like declared, most of our people have never had it so good. Like, that's the quote. And it highlighted actually the dissatisfaction and disparities that a lot of people were feeling, particularly around young people and youth were feeling it. So there was a kind of cultural shift happening with young people that was very distinctly like rebellious and different to what it was pre and during the war, with British popular culture, as I've said, was being increasingly influenced by American music and cinema and fashion. So the Teddy Boys kind of did a symbolic resistance to their working class label through their flashy style. So they would wear long Edwardian type jackets. They had slicked, styled back quiffs in their hair, bootlace ties, narrow drain pipe trousers, and had a really distinct love for rock and roll music. And that's what banded them together. They were very, you could very outwardly see who was a Teddy Boy. And their style symbolized a rejection kind of the drabness that they saw from their parents in the working class. And it was presented as a statement of this newfound confidence that they could look like the ruling class that they were supposedly aspiring to be like. And they're actually considered to be icons of a time when Britain was redefining itself. So it's where youth culture was challenging the status quo. Because it was a sense that the working class could say, well, we're not that different from the ruling class. We can look exactly like them and dress exactly like them, despite this kind of saying that we're very different. And alongside the Teddy Boys, a little bit after, probably more to mid to late 1960s, there was a really starking change. Well, not like a change, but a really starking different subculture that came out, where you see the Teddy Boys doing a symbolic resistance to capitalist social class structure through dressing like the ruling class, even though they were working class. And then you had the subculture of the skinheads, which came out. And that was also originating in working class neighborhoods of London. And they were kind of rejecting this counterculture movement of peace and love and deliberately cultivating a subculture that was as far removed as possible from it. So they were used their fashion sense instead to dress like the upper class and kind of do resistance that way. They became very aggressively hyper-masculine. So they would shave their heads, wear heavy steel-toed boots and like sleeveless tops and straight leg jeans to portray this really exaggerated version of working class masculinity. And this was because they wanted to recreate traditional working class values and community. And it was actually in response to Britain seeing an increasing rate of immigration. And the skinheads felt that they were working all these jobs, these manual labor jobs down at the docks and in manufacturing. This was where they felt immigrants were like, quote, stealing their jobs. Because when immigrants would come over, those were the kind of job areas that they would be going into, was the more manual labor jobs. And this started to receive really significant media attention from 1969-1970 time, because there was an appeal from Pakistani people living in England for protection against skinhead attacks. And because skinheads presented this hyper-aggressive masculine kind of personality, they were prone to being associated with violence. And even though actually they started off as being kind of non-political, they've now since been drawn into kind of extreme nationalist and anti-immigration sentiment. So their subculture went from being less politicized to now being very politicized in response to immigration and ethnic inequalities that way. So they very much differed from the Teddy Boys, even though they were around a similar time, in resisting class structure. They kind of embraced their working class roots and just really over-exaggerated it, whereas the Teddy Boys kind of just disregarded it and didn't want to be associated with it by presenting themselves as being much more part of the ruling class. Now, we kind of take a jump into the 1980s, where we see two different kind of subcultures